Thank you very much, Bill. and thanks to Doug for telling us a lot about sort of the laboratory of the states. So a lot of the things that need to be done happen in the states, as Doug very clearly illustrated. And I'm going to kind of continue that theme and focus specifically on some of the things that New Jersey has done. And my talk, the title of the talk in the program talks about policy development. And it's really about evaluation, actually. And so I want to double up on my disclosures. commercial interest to disclose, but also that this project was funded by a STAR grant from the Environmental Protection Agency. And so the agency has not reviewed this information and it does not represent agency policy or an agency statement. So this particular STAR funding opportunity was for environmental public health indicators, and so you're going to, it's sort of an indicator theme. It underlies my talk, and we wanted to look at the state level, obviously. And beyond some of the typical ways we look at environmental indicators, we wanted to apply risk assessment to start to explore the population health implications. And what we're getting at is evaluation, as I mentioned. Do policies actually reduce risks and improve public health? And the reason it's important to kind of take that next step and look at the risk assessment and the health implications is because typically indicator reports at the national level, I'm mostly addressing here, address sort of our environmental health paradigm kind of through the point of exposure. And some of them are just kind of process indicators, as many of you will know. But we wanted to take the next step and try to, do the dose estimates, look at potential health effects. So our approach was a collaborative one, working with departments in New Jersey, departments of environmental protection and health. And mostly we worked with them on the data inventory. This is sort of a historical piece, so we're going back in time. And sort of from that data inventory, we were able to choose particular policies to follow and examine. Our exposure and health risk metrics are done with sort of standard risk assessment procedures. I'm going to be showing you some cancer risk estimates when we get to the particular examples from the case studies, and also the non-cancer metric, which is called the hazard quotient, which it's just an indicator. It's sort of the bright line. If your hazard quotient is more than one, we're concerned, potentially there's increased risk there. If it's below one, it's sort of below our quote-unquote level of concern. And the sort of the policy evaluation piece, and the reason we went back in time to try to develop these sort of the longitudinal aspect is we want to look before policy and we want to look after and see what happened. This isn't always done, which is somewhat surprising. you can do it because our indicator reports do show time trends, but they're not specifically designed. They don't necessarily line things up. And so that's what we were trying to do. So just a little bit more setting the stage. So in the mid-70s, the National Cancer Institute puts out its first cancer atlases. And New Jersey led the nation in cancer mortality. Cancer Alley was one of the phrases that was used at that time. And these next couple of clips from the atlas will show the counties in New Jersey are, the reddest of red, both for males and also for females. And this served as a very potent motivator for the governor and legislator and agencies in New Jersey to set up, I want to get the name right because I wrote it down last night just to make sure. The governor passed an executive order establishing an Office of Cancer and Toxic Substances Research at the Department of Environmental Protection. And that group went on to develop environmental monitoring and other types of investigations that inform national policy in some cases. Perhaps the most well-known being the New Jersey Industrial Survey was a model for our national toxic release inventory. Also, one of the projects that Dr. Burke led when he was in New Jersey was the evaluation of groundwater contamination, and which informed both state and national safe drinking water policies. And here's just a few covers from some of the early investigations. Cancer in the environment, PCBs in fish. Actually, some of our data are drawn from that report, the industrial survey final report, and drinking water and leukemia investigation. So just kind of a handful of the things. And, of course, there are many, many more. And over the course of our project, we've sifted through hundreds of these reports to identify the data sets that kind of fit our before and after evaluation model. So the three that we looked at, and I'll show you some results, include the PCB ban, which manufacturing ban, and then processing, use, and distribution limits. So it was not an outright ban. TCE, drinking water, maximum contaminant levels, both federal and state, and also mercury. Mercury is a complicated problem. It has a complex environmental cycle, and there's really no one policy to examine. In the most recent 10 years, there have been a number of, and there were policies before then, surely, but in the, you know, there's been more attention and more effort in the past 10 years, and including New Jersey joining a Northeast States consortium to adopt tougher than national power plant technology standards. You see, mercury is a work in progress for sure. Here's just a little bit of a snapshot of some of the exposure modeling that we did and the results that I will show you, just to give you a little bit of background. So for PCBs, I'm going to show you data for a child exposure scenario at average consumption, but maximum PCB concentration. For TCE, I'm going to look at an adult. Again, where I'm kind of presenting you sort of the kind of worst-case scenarios here for the most part, but we did do a variety of modeling, both kind of average and high-end. And for mercury, I'll show you some adult and also child. And the primary data source for our exposure estimates and developing the models was EPA's Exposure Factors Handbook. So here's the first case study looking at PCB in bass species. And this time frame, this roughly 30-year time frame, is pretty consistent across the examples that we have. So the PCB ban was 1979. So we have data prior to that, about 5 to 10 years later, and then about 20 years later. And you see, you know, very clearly, just looking at the little data table and the maximums, that the maximums have dropped two orders of magnitude. And then we see in the chart then the corresponding change in hazard quotient. And this one, again, was for a child. And in 2006, after this extended time period, we now see that the hazard quotients are in our, you know, safe range. But it took a long time to get there. Well, that's one of the bottom lines I'll come back to. A little bit more complicated picture then for trichloral ethylene and public water supplies. Here we have a little bit of a different data set. We have the early data before the MCLs came into effect. We have some year-by-year data from the mid-80s to 1990, and then we have a more recent data set. One thing to note as we explore this a little bit more, except for the most recent data, which is separated by surface water and groundwater, all of the earlier data sets are combined, or basically mixed. So the results from groundwater and surface water have been combined. Just in terms of the data, the detections, it has varied quite a lot in terms of maximums over time. These data are just detections, so and in fact, there are really a small proportion of detections. So this is a difficult data set to deal with because we really didn't have the full range of the data. We just kind of, it's just focused on the detections, basically. I think the sort of the clearest way to see the effect of the policy is in my third column, the percent of public water supplies with detects. So we can see that number has gone down quite clearly over the time period. And so that's very reassuring. And in terms of the health risk estimates here, it has varied, you know, with the maximum detections over time. But all of these actually are within EPA's acceptable sort of cancer risk range. And then finally, looking at mercury again in a bass species, so in fish tissue. So the work in progress here with mercury. Looking at our data sets, we see actually that the median levels in the samples are going up over time, but there's some evidence that the maximums are coming down, so that's encouraging. But the health risk metric in this case, it's non-cancer. My yellow line here seems shifted, so it should be at 1. It's a little closer to 2, but sort of from the earliest data set, we're kind of right at that hazard quotient of 1. In the more recent data, however, we see that we're over the levels of concern, and we're still over the levels of concern both for adults and children. So just to kind of gather together again and do this policy evaluation piece looking at the impact. So we very clearly see the positive results from the PCB ban. Two order of magnitude drop in maximum fish tissue concentrations, and really a real shift in the distribution of PCB levels, clearly downward, and the corresponding decrease in the health risk metrics. For TCE and water, improvement in the percentage of water supplies with detectable TCE. Cancer risks have remained acceptable sort of over the time period that we have been able to look at. We're seeing higher levels in groundwater than surface water, so that's indicative of a lingering problem in terms of the groundwater. And maximum values are still at or above MCLs, both the federal and state. So, we see some positive impact, but the work's not done. And then again, with mercury, medians increasing, which we're not seeing that full, we're not seeing the distribution really reduced quite yet, although we see the maximums coming down, which is encouraging. And the health risk metric remains above levels of concern. I want to close. I've just got a couple more slides here, revisiting Cancer Alley. So this is all-cause mortality in New Jersey over the time period that we've been examining, basically the mid-70s to around 2009-2010. And you'll see that rates increased modestly from the mid-70s to the early 90s, but have been steadily declining since then, which is encouraging. And New Jersey is no longer number one in terms of national cancer. It's number 33. Of course, I'm not trying to directly link the policies that I talked about to this. Of course, controlling environmental and occupational exposures is part of a much broader cancer control strategy in New Jersey. And, you know, so kind of some bigger picture conclusions and implications to draw here. And starting right off the bat, the importance of what the states do in terms of monitoring and the public health laboratories. We wouldn't be able to do, I wouldn't be here giving you this talk if New Jersey hadn't consistently over time continued its monitoring program. So I can present to you data that covers a 30-year period. And that's an investment that needs to be maintained. The results underscore the value of prevention. So can we prevent contamination incidents, right? Because recovery, like in the example of PCBs, which is obviously a persistent contaminant, recovery can take a very long time. Enduring recovery, other types of policies are needed. So one of the things, because we were looking at fish tissue for a couple of our examples, you know, it raises the importance of things like state and local fish consumption advisories for controlling exposure while environmental policies take effect and the levels in the environment come down. But we have a very encouraging story to tell here about the benefit of environmental policy. And you know, these data can help us advocate in this the current climate of increasing concern about the burden of regulation. Thank you.